Hello everyone, my name is Vlad Glavanu. I'm the head of psychology and counseling at Webster University Geneva and the director of the Webster Center for Creativity and Innovation. And it's my great pleasure to be here now with Professor Giovanni Emanuele Corazza from the University of Bologna, who is also heading, among many other things, the Marconi Institute for Creativity. Hello, Giovanni.
Hi, Vlad. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
It's my pleasure to our pleasure actually to host you. And tonight we're going to talk later on about creativity and about creative computational thinking. But before going into any kind of specific details of your research, I wanted to ask, what brought you to the study of creativity in the first place?
Well, creativity for me is a passion, first of all, because my training is engineering. And so creativity is not the natural topic that you would work on. But I started that as a really personal reading. And then I started working more and more on that. And now we opened this institute, Marconi Institute for Creativity, in the name of still what can be considered an engineer, Marconi, but an inventor. So a person that used the ability of our minds to generate ideas that are both original and also have an impact on society. And starting from that, of course, with a team which is multidisciplinary, with psychologists in the team and linguists and collaboration with the neuroscientists and so on. Now we're really doing research. We're doing education. So we have courses at the University of Bologna on creativity and innovation, which are actually offered to the entire body of students. Of course, there are too many students at the University of Bologna, 80,000. But we offer the course for 50, so that's a very, very small portion. But it's these 50 students, or they can come to 80, but they come from all different parts of the university. So you have engineers with students from human sciences. You have prospective doctors there, all in the same room, talking about something which is actually horizontal to all of the disciplines. And it's a very nice experience. And then we do the third leg of the Marconi Institute of Creativity is really application in the real life. So typically with industries that want to innovate and they have product or service portfolios, they want to work on that. And so we help them, we facilitate sessions for the generation of ideas. And with these three elements together, we are really pushing for something that we think, and I know this is something that is that you, Vlad, agree with, and there's a trend in society to think that creativity is one of the more fundamental skills for the future, because it's a future which will see a lot of technology, help from technology, but also transformation of the job market by technology, and that will require some change and some update in our skills. And we believe creativity is probably the most important one.
Excellent. Well, we do share that belief, and I hope the people listening would as well. But I'm also struck, and I know from your work, this multidisciplinary ethos of you have colleagues and students coming from different disciplines. From your experience, how easy or difficult is it to have this variety of backgrounds thinking and talking about creativity? Do you find many you know, differences obviously that are quite important for the way people approach it? How do you manage to mix it? You even wrote or edited a book on this topic.
Yeah, you're right. The first wall that we have to go beyond is really prejudice about the fact that creativity is something that only pertains to certain disciplines, certain subjects, and certain attitudes, whereas we know by fact and by also by science, let's say, that this is a transversal set of concepts and abilities and traits that can be used in any discipline. And so one of the questions that I always have to answer, well, you're an engineer, why do you work on creativity? And it's good to start from there, because then you are able to show that engineers can be as creative as artists, of course, with specificities which make everyone different. Of course, to have general principles doesn't mean at all that everyone will become the same, or we are not tying creativity with any within any system. But we are given tools, essentially, extracting principles, understanding the process, understanding methods, mm-hmm. and we're given tools that then can be applied to any discipline. So once that initial bias is overcome, then people actually, and students in particular, like the fact that they understand things and they can use these methods in any field, both professional life, everyday life, personal hobbies, and it becomes a very liberating methodology in the end.
So it's a difference that kind of makes a creative difference with this group.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
And whenever people meet and they come from different disciplines, obviously I think one of the first lessons or the topics of discussion probably is what is creativity. And you already briefly mentioned the two criteria: something needs to be novel, needs to be somehow useful or relevant. But you also of late worked on a more dynamic approach, even called it a dynamic definition of creativity. If you could elaborate a little bit, how does creativity appear from this new perspective?
Well, essentially, the fact that something can remain static or can exist as it is an illusion. Mm. Nothing in our world, nothing in our cosmos is actually static, but we are anticipating machines. We need, in order to adapt ourselves to the environment, we need to believe that we know what is going to happen. Otherwise, we don't know really how to behave and how to adapt to the environment. So from that need of continuity comes the illusion that things can remain the same. But actually nothing can remain the same. And every time instant that we live is new. And therefore the dynamic approach to creativity is really to recognize this fact, because creativity is the domain where this change is not only happening, but it's wanted. You're looking for change. And so the originality and effectiveness or value, which are the two classic criteria, instead of being the necessity or the requirements for creativity to exist, we say they are the requirements for a creative achievement to be recognized by someone at a certain time in a certain culture. But the creativity game is much more than that. Mm. The creativity game is a potential to have originality and effectiveness. And that potential means that, first of all, you have resources, you have time, you search, you experience, you have failures, you have inconclusiveness. All of this is part of the game. To give yourself the freedom to play with ideas, the freedom to explore alternatives, even though, for example, there is a best practice that everybody's following, still you allow yourself to explore. That's already creativity. That's already playing the game. And then, you know, you're humble. You recognize that what other people have done is great, but sometimes you find ideas that might have advantages, and then you might have some creative achievements. And of course, then there's a problem of representing those to the outside world, persuading other people that what you have done really has a value, and the same idea represented in two different ways to two different audiences can have a totally different fate.
Yes.
So the final representation, not final, but let's say the interaction with the whoever it is that you're working with or you're talking to in your family, in your professional life, that is fully part of the game of creativity and determines sometimes success or failure of an idea. But the judgment or the assessment that other people or yourself will make of an idea is not objective at all. It's totally subjective.
Yeah.
And to go along with Pierce, so a pragmatist approach, the real value is a collection of all the possible meanings that you can extract from an idea. Mm. And therefore, it's a never-ending exercise. So to see the value of a new idea is part of the creativity game, and it's a never-ending exercise, which is totally dynamic. And therefore, in the end, in order to be able to, for example, educate younger generations to creativity, you have to convince professors or teachers that they, when they assess creativity work, it cannot be a score that you can give, but it must be an interaction. in which a student offers an idea and the professor is good if he or she is able to extract all the possible value from that idea,
yes,
coming down to the same level of the students. So it's a totally flat architecture. And this is why it's very difficult to introduce in classes. And one thing that I really want to say is that we don't think that every subject should be taught in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Traditional classes for math or physics are very important because knowledge is the basis upon which you can build and generate ideas. But you need some specific time with some specific activities in which you have this new architecture, new topic, which is transversal to other subjects,
yes,
which is the element which will become significant for education in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an addition and not just a revolution of the entire educational system.
Very interesting. So if I'm to take you back, everything you said was very relevant and connected to this dynamic view, which is a process view. And I really like also the notion of inconclusiveness that you write about, the idea that you have to account for it within the definition. If we get stuck on the final product, we basically destroy the very phenomenon we're looking at, which by nature means a progression and interaction with others and constantly retransforming and doing things with. So I really like your perspective. You go from the definition, you outline also the implications. I know you do research in many other areas. Some of them have to do with neuroscience, you and your team, also with technology and human-computer interaction. Can you tell us a few kind of highlights of findings that come from recent research in this area?
Okay, thanks. A couple of things about our neuroscientific approach, which is really right now based on the EEG and measuring the power of brain waves in two bands, specifically the alpha band, 8 to 12 hertz, and the beta band. And we're doing that while we asked our participants to perform a typical divergent thinking test, like the unusual users test. And essentially, we have confirmed some results that we found from the literature that tell us that divergent thinking test performance is really related to power in the alpha band, especially in the right temporoparietal region. So we have found that. But we also have some new results, which I think are very significant, that we are now able to predict the originality scored by external experts, which is a social process, based on the power level of the alpha oscillation in certain regions of the brain, which means that a physiological measurement on the brain state during a certain activity predicts not only the behavior of the person, but what other people in a social relation will say of what that person has produced.
Yeah,
which is a connection between a social and cultural reality, because that's where the assessment will come from,
yes,
with the performance of a brain, so a biological machine, if not, we do not talk about the spiritual part.
Okay,
and that's one result which I think is very interesting. And then we decided that since we see that this power level is important, we could try to close a loop in a neurofeedback fashion. So offering our participants a video screen with a movie that stands still and only progresses if the power level goes 30% beyond the resting state level. And we only tell them, try to make this video advance. That's the only instruction that we give them.
Yeah.
And amazingly, 7 out of 8 people make the video move, which means that without knowing, of course, what is happening, they're actually stimulating this oscillation in their brain. And then we measure the performance after this training session, which is repeated 4 times, again in the divergent thinking test. And we see this growth of the originality score, again measured by external reviewers. So we seem to be able to train this kind of state of the mind of our participants, and to find results which are statistically repeatable,
yes,
with the outside audience. So we believe that, of course, we are still in the preliminary steps of this, but there is something that could also in the future become useful I have to say that this works primarily for those that start with a low creative achievement level, whereas those that have a lifetime of achievement, they don't seem to be stimulated by this kind of activity. So
yeah.
It's really good for the democratization of creativity, so to allow everyone to become creative more than the peaks of those that already are creative.
It's very interesting. I, as you know, I'm not an expert in the neuroscience part. I do know that including in neuroscience and in cognition and in cognitive theories, you have more extended ways and more kind of almost, you know, ways that take the environment into account and other people. I don't know if you ever have done work with mirror neurons or around that kind of area, because what you tell me about how our brains as well as physical organs, right, they react or anticipate or resonate with what might happen in the brain of another who is a kind of a audience member or a kind of a judge is very interesting. It speaks to this embodiment of creativity that we often don't talk about and how the system goes two ways, right? It goes upwards to group, society, culture, whatever is whatever, you know, it's the larger scheme, the larger element, and then it goes downwards in a way to brain, neuronal, and all these kind of levels, the detail. So I think if your research could show the resonances and how things kind of co-vary at different levels, that definitely is a big step.
That would be a great objective. Of course, so far we've only worked with a single participants and so far nothing with two or more people working together, and always the environment is not completely natural. As a minimum, you have this EEG cap on yourself and you're stuck in a room.
Yes.
So it's not really a natural situation to work with. And therefore, we are only measuring a small bit of a process which is much more complex. And that also means that the results that you get always has to be seen in a certain perspective, and you cannot extrapolate too much out of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Still, there is, let's say that from the neuroscientific to the cognitive level, and the modeling of the creative thinking process, we have explanations that seem to be coherent. I'm not saying that is the truth. They're always modeling. There's model, but the model seem to accommodate the results that we get quite neatly. And then from there, we are trying to introduce elements related not only to cognition, but also to emotion, because we believe that the emotional part gives the energy, the necessary energy for a person to go beyond the minimum level of activity which is required when you just say the things that people expect from you.
Yes.
And that make you feel well because you're within the culture, the accepted knowledge. But in order to go beyond that and be original, you need a spur in that energy that we can interpret as an emotional energy. And also when you get the idea, there is always a sort of happiness or joy, instantaneous joy that comes in. So we're trying to introduce that element also, which means that this we want to see from the neuroscientific approach the involvement of the limbic system to see that there's an emotional part coming in into these large-scale models that we're introducing. So again, it's a very complex reality and a very complex phenomenon, but also very interesting to study.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as I said, and you know my orientation, we actually talked a little bit even before, I think the most interesting questions are around the systemic. We all do in some ways a systemic model or version of creativity, meaning that we look at different layers of what the creativity system might involve. There is the brain, there is society, and in between there are so many things. And I think the greatest value would be if we can develop the vocabulary. And as you said, it's also a matter of what is coherent between the empirical data we have and the theoretical things we already know, that can cut across levels so that one question can be formulated in terms of neuronal activity and another one, you know, can be about emotions and so on, but they resonate and they kind of work within a framework. And I think that's part of your mission and the team as well, to develop this multidisciplinary, more kind of comprehensive frame for creativity. That's my understanding of it.
Yeah, no, I think that you are completely right. There should be some kind of ambition to create a multi-layer system of knowledge, not only for creativity, but of course this is a dream for all epistemology in a sense. And these layers are all interconnected. Normally what we say is that when you go from a lower layer to a higher layer, there's something that is emerging out of the lower layer, so that when you have a higher perspective, you can try to explain this perspective based on the lower layers, but these higher layers can never be reduced to the lower layers. There's always something new that comes in
the
that
is not explicable, right? The emergence
simply
element.
With the atoms coming from the lower layer. So if you take a social or cultural perspective, there must be phenomena that cannot be simply explained by looking at what the brain does. Yeah. Still, that does not mean that it's not useful to look at the brains. So every level has its usefulness. And typically, the lower layers are more amenable to scientific study, to experiments. The more you go up in layers, the more difficult it becomes to be repeatable, to control experiments. But again, that does not mean that it's not useful to work at the higher layers, because there are phenomena that emerged and that you can only see at, on the large scale. So all these different perspectives should coexist, actually.
And they can inspire each other. I mean, it does happen for me to read some neuroscientific literature. And as you said, it resonates at a different, maybe with a different vocabulary, but it does spark an idea, and more communication between people who work at different levels would be great. And I agree with you, the issue of explanation, we cannot be reductionist here. And there's a difference between explaining versus explaining away. I think that's what, that is the big danger, that some people, we're not giving names, of course, it's not, but try to explain away a certain level by saying, you know, let's look at the simplest level and we can find an explanation there. We don't need to complexify further. But the story of creativity, the way you started it, I'm going to bring you towards the end to another yet new perspective, which kind of ties together many things you said right now about organic kind of creativity. And you recently wrote about that, and you talk about it. It kind of reflects your view of the evolution of society, of technology, of where we are today. So I would love to hear a little bit more about this intriguing notion.
Okay, organic creativity is a perspective. So it's not the full reality of creativity, because creativity, as we said in the start, it's a tool that can be used in different disciplines, but also in different ways. It can be used for the benefit of humanity, but also there's a dark side.
Yes.
And it can use also for inventing weapons or other things that are not really beneficial to our society. So the concept of organic creativity is adding to the definition of creativity the fact that the activity must be beneficial for the person and for the society. So it connects the notion of originality, effectiveness, and well-being, both at personal level and societal level. And by looking at the fact that creative activity is really a balance between dreaming and control, to say it very simply, if you can achieve the balance, which is also dynamic, because in different parts of the process you need a different balance, it's not an always, there's not a single recipe, but depending on where you are in the process, there's a different need for control or dreaming and imagination. If you can achieve this state of mind, our dream is to show that this is also beneficial for your well-being, but in a different way with what it would be, for example, with mindfulness.
Yes.
Mindfulness is a state of relaxation and well-being, but while you're in that state, you're actually not performing any activity. You're taking care of yourself, your wellness, and that's great. But we think that we can have a similar effect in a productive state. So we have our dream is to make it possible for human beings to feel well, not only in their personal life, but in society, and be productive at the same time, coexisting with an environment which is becoming more and more technological.
Yes.
So all of these elements coming together to give an probably kind of a new role for the human being, which is more related to idea generation and less to execution, in the idea that machines will be executing most of the times for us. And hopefully we will remain on top of this wave. We will be surfing over the wave of technology and feeling well at the same time, because not working in the future, as some people say, that we will not work because machines will be doing the work. I don't think that will lead to happiness. Mm. I think that work in the end gives meaning to our lives, but it will be a different kind of activity, more related to creativity and less to simple repetitive execution of specialized tasks.
So basically organic creativity, as you said, it's a way of looking at the phenomenon. It's not necessarily a new type added. It will be something that it's a connection between creativity, well-being in an era and an age of technology that will probably come to the fore more and more. But you're proposing a kind of a new focus in many ways on what I like very much when you also mentioned human dignity and the role of creativity today for humanity. And it's interesting, there is an interesting parallel with the very old history of the species, the phylogenetic history of how creativity is often mentioned at the early beginnings with discovery of, you know, the use of tools and fire and invention of many what we call today primitive things. And I think it's almost like a historical loop until today, where again we have a special role for creativity in many ways, right? Defining something about humanity.
Okay, now you're opening up a very large front on the origins of creativity.
Just at the end.
Which to me are very, very interesting. Mm. And you mentioned the stone tool industry. Now we have... Yeah. Findings from Africa, which date back 3.3 million years in Lumekwe. So that means much before Homo sapiens. So it means that hominids, much before Homo sapiens, were already able to generate ideas, create artifacts that were not specific for immediate survival, but were thought for future activities that might improve the well-being of a society. And that means that the origin of creativity in the hominids can be traced back to those kind of ages. Mm-hmm. But then we have the ambition to look at creativity also in other species, animals, yes, and maybe also not only animals, so different forms of life, mm-hmm, because in the end we might maybe close with this. What kind of creative idea was more original and effective than life? Mm-hmm. Bringing life to a planet that has no life is the most creative idea of all.
So life is a kind of a creative achievement or project in many ways,
the super creative achievement. Exactly. Nothing better than that.
We're getting into very philosophical questions about the intentionality behind that creative project, right? Mm. And probably, I don't know if we discussed this, but at least in my work, I have a complicated relation with the idea that everything to be creative, it has to have intention to be creative. I mean, we would exclude the role of accidents and exclude this more beautiful kind of metaphysical perspective, right, on what creativity is. Thank you very much, Giovanni, for these thoughts. This has been Vlad Glavanu in dialogue with Professor Giovanni Emanuele Corazza from the University of Bologna. As part of the podcast series and the lecture series organized by the Webster Center for Creativity and Innovation. If you would like to listen to more conversations around creativity, imagination, and other topics, please go to podcast.webster.ch.